Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Hello from Chicago. It's Wednesday afternoon, March the 27th. It's been a heck of a long time since there were lines of folks around the block in front of Mr. Kelly's at 11 o'clock at night for the second show, but that was the case Monday night. That was the case last night because I was in the line, and it'll probably be the case the rest of the week because the Smothers Brothers are back at a place they haven't had a chance to visit for, what is it, 10, 11, 12? Well, let's find out.
It's almost 10 years since the last time we played Mr. Kelly's.
I didn't think it had been that long.
Yeah.
Dick Smothers, thank you for coming. Brother thank Tommy, you. Welcome.
I'd say it's been about 8 years.
But my brother's never been accurate.
Is there any significance to the fact that the Smothers Brothers sort of dropped out of the entertainment field with the election of Richard Nixon, and now suddenly you're back entertaining again? I mean, is there anything that we should draw from this?
Well, if we get a show, you can count on Nixon being out.
Yeah.
Totally.
By the way, now you did a couple of special things in the interim, did you not?
We worked with non-direction. You know what I mean? We fulfilled a couple of contracts. We did a few specials, but we didn't have the purpose that we had in the prior 10 years, which was always getting something a little bit bigger, a little bit better, you know, more horsepower, all that kind of thing.
Right.
And we just sort of filled a few spots of our time. But I would say this is the first time, the start of when we were on your show last in October, early October, when we played the Playboy Club Lake Geneva. That was the first job with a purpose. And the purpose was to get back and to get into the swing of things in clubs.
The interview that I had with you two fellows was before you actually opened at the Playboy Club in Geneva, so you've had a number of months to get this whole thing under your belt, getting back doing it again twice a night or three times a night or whatever it is. Are you comfortable now? Is it fun once again?
We got it. I'm not being smart, but we got it.
Well,
flaunt it now.
You got to flaunt it, right?
Well, sure.
You know, when you saw us last, see, we were full of a lot of rational fear, I think. But number one, we didn't know if time's passed us by. Number two, it's like a ball player had been out. He was a great star, you know, 5 years ago, but does he still have it? You know, there's a lot of question marks in our mind, and the first job did not answer those questions, nor did the second, nor the third one sort of did. But now, after working about 4 months, we feel that we can be funny and that people will come out and see us. And if we do good, if we do well, they'll like us.
Well, as I said, I haven't seen lines waiting for the second show in a long line.
That's exciting. Oh. Mr. Kelly's is really an exciting job for us here. This is the first city, the first job. Right after we did the Jack Parr show in 61, early 61, we had a booking here. And this is the first city that took notice of us. And they were from that time on, we've really felt good in Chicago.
Chicago's got a good reputation for that. There are an awful lot of people who are... Barbara Streisand played Kelly's when very few people in the world knew who Barbara was.
Barbara who?
Yeah, right, right. The one who won't be on the Academy Award show. I wonder why.
Why did she say that?
I don't know.
Is she nominated?
Well, sure. Well, she's nominated as Best Actress, but that song, The Way We Were, is nominated. I think they asked her to sing it, but she said no. Why do people do that? People who are, you know, really make it big, then kind of forget that there are certain obligations that you should try and honor. You can't do every one, because naturally the demands upon you are tremendous, but...
I think that it's...
not necessarily Barbara, but anybody.
The bigger you get, the bigger the business is. I think there's this amount of integrity one has to have, regardless of their stature. There's nothing that is owed, that she has to owe anything to show up. If she feels strongly and personally that her convictions is that the Academy is not representative, and even though she's being honored this time, she doesn't believe that artists are honored correctly, and to support that...
Is that what she said?
I don't know.
No, if she said that, I'd go along, because there's a lot of artists.
I'm assuming. I can't imagine any other reason why she would not.
Maybe she just doesn't want to sing the song.
George C. Scott. I admired what he did, and I admired what Marlon Brando did. And I would assume that she has some reason other than peak, you know.
Is there any time in the career of the Smothers Brothers when one of you might have realized, or both of you collectively realized, that you were becoming something that you didn't want to become? You know, a high hat, snobbish.
Yeah, sometimes that creeps in, and it's a matter of just having a good subjective view, and always have my brother to say, "Hey, man, you're getting a little smarter."
Yeah, it helps to have two, because I've never been in that position, because the business to me has just been like any other business. It just happened to be when I got into, and I realize it. It doesn't make me a special person just because I'm successful in our chosen line.
That's the trouble, you see. With you guys, it is a business, but the public doesn't always remember that. Sure, they're going to pay money to see you, but the public, we all do this. We put people that we admire on little pedestals. Maybe they don't always belong up there.
That's right.
Right, so it's something where doctors used to be, you know, or athletes, you know, something special, something God-given. I remember when I first started skiing a long time ago, we played a ski resort in Aspen, and there's a guy named Stein Erickson. He was the first guy to really make a big commercial. He was an Olympic star. And I heard he came out of a mountain cloud. Every morning he lived in a cloud. And I'd go up on a mountain and I'd see him ski down the hill. I never saw him go up in the lift. You know?
That's great.
Something special.
Dickie, you've had areas much outside the entertainment field that have taken up a good part of your life. Skiing, racing is one. Did you know Peter Revson?
I knew
Peter.
Boy,
that was... just a terrible shock the other day.
It's always a shock when something like that happens to someone you know. It's a little more personal. I could read the paper and it says 20,000 people were killed in Vietnam, but that's a very impersonal thing, even though if I went over there, it'd become personal. Peter is a good example of a guy who lived 35 years. That's all he lived, 35 years, but was doing exactly what he wanted against pressure from all sides. From his, I don't know if the AP story was correct when he said his mother saw him race once, his very first race in Hawaii. She came out to this track and told her friends, "What a stupid, stupid boy. Boy, look, he's so stupid." And then she never saw him race again. But he lived a full life, man. That guy did exactly what he wanted to do. Now, I was thinking about this because people have asked me about Peter. We never know when we're going to get killed, let's face it, or die, from natural causes or other. And if someone said, "Hey, you could, you want to be a race driver? Okay, you could drive for 15 years and then you'll die in a crash." I say, "Well, that sounds okay, but I want to drive 14 and a half years. I'll quit the last 6 months." We just don't know. You know, so obviously if someone said to Peter, you'll drive for 15 years, then you'll die in a wreck, he'll say, "Wait a minute, I want to go in another line of business," right? Because we don't want to know. But the guy is just, it's just a matter of, I think, living the... I think we talked about this last time. He lived, he did exactly what he wanted. He was very successful in it. And it's over. And I think it's a waste, but I'm imposing my thoughts on his life. I have no right to say, "Hey, Peter, you've wasted your life.
Dick,
you followed me."
When Dick was driving, that chance was always there.
Yeah, I knew the chance was here, and maybe that's why I didn't go a little bit quicker, you know?
What was the deciding factor when... Because do you race anymore at all now?
No, I stopped.
You stopped, but was there an instant? Did that happen in an instant, the decision to stop racing, or was it slow?
It was slowly. It's sort of like the dissolvement of a marriage, you know? At the first indication you know things aren't going right, you still have very good times, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The biggest argument relating to a marriage, the biggest argument was when I was racing Le Mans. I was going down so fast on that long 3 mile straight, and I kept saying, "Why am I doing this? Why am I doing this?" I said, "This car is scaring me." And it did scare me the whole race, and then the car broke, and I never drove again.
Tommy, were there times that you wished your brother would stop? Did you ever try to get him to stop?
No, I've always wanted to work a single. And, I always encouraged him to race.
Tom and Dick Smothers are here today. They're also at Mr. Kelly's all week long. And if you want to get a table for the first or second show, if I were you, I'd call, because reservations are filling up fast and furious. We heard all sorts of stories out of Los Angeles, I guess. Is it the Troubadour that you were appearing at?
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago.
When John, can you give us exactly what happened with the John Lennon incident? I'm sure you've been asked and you've told the story, but all we know is what
it was opening night at the Troubadour in Los Angeles, and it was a happening, kind of. A lot of people showed up, and everybody was...
A lot of stars, a lot of people that really wanted to see us, you know, see us do good.
Did you know they were all in the audience?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We invited them.
Picked up the tab.
Yeah, well,
a lot of people showed up, and it was like people hadn't seen the Smothers Brothers in Hollywood. But, you know, like, that's the
yeah, what a great movie title, The Smothers Brothers in Hollywood.
Right.
I didn't see it now.
And he happened to be sitting with Harry Nilsson. There was Peter Lawford in that area. There was Jack Haley. There was Paul Newman and his wife in that little group, too?
No, not there.
That was the next show.
Yeah.
But there was a whole lot of people sitting in this little area.
It was just a big happening, and everybody was pretty high. A lot of vibrations. The room was just jammed, and they were really looking, and we did the whole show in the opening act. We just went out and did it, and everybody had been drinking a little bit and getting ready, and... Lennon and just started gently...
He wasn't malicious.
He didn't intend it that way. It was like it was one-on-one. He was pretty drunk, both Harry and John Lennon. So they were just having a conversation with us on stage in the middle of our act. Well, he got very colorful with his words.
He kept stepping on joke lines. It went on for a period of songs.
Oh, I see.
It was very hard for our concentration.
Sure.
And people started saying, hey, shut up, will you?
Yeah.
Can you hold it down? I think Peter went over and said to him, which is Peter Lawford, which is so great. He says, I don't know who you are, but you better shut up. Or I'm going to hit you in the mouth.
Peter said that to Lennon?
Yeah.
Great line.
Right.
That's
I said,
of a
you know,
put down.
Fame is so fleeting, isn't it? But
well,
he didn't. He didn't shut up.
Too bad.
And someone came over and asked him to be quiet again. He wouldn't do it. And then another guy said, hey, you better be quiet. And I think Lennon swung at somebody, and then the guy swung at him, and then a glass was thrown. And
we couldn't see it from the stage.
Really.
It was a little darker. There's a rumble going on.
It's like the start of an avalanche. I didn't know what was happening. And then all of a sudden, the double doors bursted open. I think about six people made a hasty exit for Mr. Lennon.
And Harry Nilsson and Dickie said, well, the next song we're going to do is a song that Harry Nilsson wrote. Too bad he's not going to get to hear it.
We went into Midnight Cowboy.
Anyway, it wasn't that bad a scene, and it didn't bother us. I think more of our friends were upset with it than Dickie and I.
Tommy was upset at the time, and I think he validly was. He got over it, but you know, he knows Harry and he knows John very well. And it was, we feel, and we still do, it was an unprofessional thing to do, to disrupt an act like that. If I want to get drunk and get unruly, I'll do it not in the midst of someone's nightclub show.
It's like that silly thing that Sam Peckinpah did at the Jimmy Cagney tribute.
Same thing.
You know,
it's okay. And it was okay.
It didn't hurt the show. I wasn't bugged at all. I had a lot of fun.
Well, you got great press.
Well,
really?
No, it was John Lennon's opening. We were bugged about the press.
I see.
The Smothers Brothers interfered with John Lennon's opening.
Yeah. But the thing that made me feel good was that the audience was genuinely displeased with this fella for picking on us. You know.
Do you hear rumors out in Hollywood? We hear them in Chicago that, you know, maybe the Beatles are going to get back together again and make a tour.
That'd be very nice. I think one of the problems that John had, and also Harry Nilsson is having, is the same problem that I had for a while. When you're not working and you haven't been working on a product and you have high energy and you're a creative person, that energy has to go somewhere. And it goes into a social trip where you get drunk or get a little bit crazy. And I was a time when I was drinking too much and carrying on, and I didn't have a gig. And once you can focus and channel that energy in, I said on stage the next day that to be as obnoxious as they were is I wish I could possibly be that obnoxious, because on the other side of the coin is great creativity. And if I could be that obnoxious, I could certainly write better songs and be more creative. And so I say I'm always just a little obnoxious.
I think that if they did a tour right now, it could be something on the level of a Dylan's tour, you know, where they could only sell $9 million worth of tickets, but they got mail orders for $22 million or something like that.
Did you guys see any of the concerts?
No.
The Dylan concerts?
No.
It was an experience.
We were working at the same time in little clubs.
It was just, it's a happening, as you just described your opening a little while ago.
Yeah.
Tommy, you once... weren't you in the middle of a motion picture once, and then kind of took off in a peak of
no, I did a film for Warner Brothers, Get to Know Your Rabbit. It was an unsuccessful film, and in the mid-production, I was about a dropout, and I was trying to get the feel of the part, and I dropped out. I was heading down La Cienega to make a left-hand turn to go over to the studio, and I didn't make the left-hand turn. I kept going straight on down Los Angeles, and then caught the freeway, hit the airport, got in a plane, and I was up in Mill Valley, and nobody knew what was happening. I've never got a job since then, though, by the way. I'm still waiting for my second film.
you had to come back to your brother, and that's...
Well, I finished the film, and the film has been released.
I thought Tommy did it for another reason. You know, people seem to worry and make problems when there's no problems. That's one of the frustrating things. I come in contact with people. I don't make problems. I mean, if it's a big problem, deal with it, but don't worry about the little things. And he thought that the guys in the movie were worrying too much about little things. So he decided, I'm going to give them something to worry about to show them proper perspective. So I won't show up, and everybody will be there, ready to roll. And so therefore, he created a problem, and he said, now that's a problem.
You two guys are amazing. You are as unlike two human beings, at least you appear to be as unlike as two human beings as I've ever met. And yet you are brothers. Were you born at different times of the year? Are you under different signs?
Yeah. He's a Scorpio, and I'm an Aquarius, and we're different, but I think he's really funny. And he has great perception, and he hits things right on the head. He's very clear.
You don't have a lot of friends when you do that, you know, sometimes.
You have more friends than I do.
Yeah, I've got two. How many do you give?
I got one.
You got one.
Listen.
And you're it.
I'm it.
I got some people that you'd like to meet. I tell you what, I'll introduce you while we take care of some business.
You're going to sell something again?
Yeah.
In fact, I sure wish I could sell it.
You know, I wanted to tell
you,
at the last end of the last commercial, it went off as Christian Brothers in Napa Valley.
Right.
And there are Christian Brothers, and I met one last year when I was out there looking at vineyards.
There really are?
Yes, this was Brother Justin. He left the Brotherhood. He was running it with Brother Timothy, who's the famous guy. And they really do a job out there. They send the young
That's
guys
great.
To college. They educate them. They say, they find someone in their Brotherhood who's got talent, who's intelligent. Said, you will run a winery. Said, I don't know anything about a winery. We'll send you to school.
That's great.
And they really, they're very, really groovy people. They make fine product, by the way.
Oh, listen, and I got to let you do a commercial.
If I don't believe in it, I won't do it.
No. This is the Slater Company, and they are a company that will come in and put down carpeting in your office building, and they'll help you to decorate an office.
You like do that one. No, you do that one. I feel wine, but I don't feel carpets.
Oh. Okay.
I'll come in and lay some wine down on your carpet.
Tommy and Dick Smellers are at Mr. Kelly's. Catch them if you can. They're only in for a week. It's a busy spot this week, so if you were to make plans to go to Kelly's, it would be a good idea to get reservations in soon. And I think the thing that you will like, because you haven't had a chance to see these guys in so long, is the fact that, yeah, they do some of the routines, I guess, that they became famous for, routines similar to what you became famous for. The songs are different. But I cannot remember going into a nightclub and hearing as much variety from Gilbert and Sullivan to Down Among the Sheltering Palms.
To a madrigal.
Yeah. Right. Where did you dig up Down Among the Sheltering Palms?
Well, it's one of those songs that was... In my memory, I never learned the words. It's just that in 1940, I was 12, 11 years old, and the words stuck in my mind, and I felt I had to do it. And I just started doing it one day, and it was fun.
I was listening to do it last night, and I was trying to remember who had... There was a hit recording of that in the 40s for the life of me. I can't remember who had it, but...
There's another song, too. It's My Adobe Hacienda, and... I just might get into those songs. I don't have to learn the lyrics because I already know them. And they're pretty nice songs to do. Dickie
says it's a sort of a shock when Tommy comes out, you know,
sure.
and he says he's going to play a real, you know, heavy tune, and he's a great jazz musician. But it really goes over well.
You enjoy playing the guitar, though, don't you, Tommy?
Yeah, I get my calluses back. It's been a long time, probably 7 years since I've had calluses on my fingers.
Did you ever study, or did you just pick it up?
Oh, I took some lessons, but mostly I learned from other people, and probably the most I learned guitar was with the act. It kept pace, so I had to learn to play it to keep pace with the nightclub act and our performance. Mm-hmm. And then for a while there, the comedy took it over, and I stopped playing, and we got involved in the comedy too much, in fact. Because our best comedy comes off of music. As long as our music's good or adequate, as good as we can play it, our comedy's fine.
Where did the idea of including a Gilbert and Sullivan song originate? That fascinates me.
It was a couple years ago, we did a Julie Andrews show. And in the show was a Gilbert and Sullivan medley. And What did I sing? A poor wandering one. I sang a wandering minstrel eye.
Right.
And Tommy sang something about a modern major general or something, some cute song. Anyway, the thing is, it was around about 10 minutes, the show was overwritten, and the medley didn't go on. But that planted a seed in our head. We had never really sat and listened to Gilbert and Sullivan. And those guys were brilliant.
Well, of course they were. Of course, the trouble with doing a song like that in an audience like you guys worked before, which is a mixture of just about everything. I think last night was a perfect example. I'm sure people are nudging each other, especially maybe people under 25.
What's going
Who's
on?
Who's Gilbert and Sullivan?
Right. And, you know, and I sometimes sense it when the audience is a little incredulous on me singing this song.
Victorian type word.
Yeah, man. I said, what are they trying to
Forsooth
do to us?
Forsooth and all that.
Yeah, and then when we go into the joke in the song or change it, then it really hits home. The more incredulous they are at the start of the song, the better the payoff.
Is there a typical audience that Tommy and Dick Smothers would work before if you could make up the audience yourself? I think last night is an example of something that happens perhaps to all performers. Now, we dropped into Mr. Kelly's late after doing something else, and there were a couple of the Skylab astronauts were there, Secret Service men.
Were everywhere.
Yeah, they were all.
And they don't have a real, they're not noted for their sense of humor. They reflect the administration sense of humor.
They're a little paranoid. You should have seen those people come. I sit in a Connell's, a coffee shop across the street from Mr. Kelly's, and all of a sudden there's a cop car with a flashing blue, and then some regular cars came out, and then some guys with short hair and suits and wingtip shoes and overcoats thrown over that. We're running out and stopping cars. You know, all they did was make a mess out of that corner. You know, you could tell they're pro-administration.
Yeah.
And then these two cars came up with four stars on the... Yeah. I noticed the flag was frayed. They should have had a new flag. It was a frayed flag. And these guys going to Mr. Kelly's, either killing or the astronauts were coming in. I didn't know which one. But that was a hard audience to play to last night, the show you saw. I think some people were aware that the astronauts were there. Plus, and I think they wanted to see the show. I'm sure it wasn't the Secret Service men saying, "Hey, let's go see the show."
Let's go see this mother.
That was not a good typical makeup last night. The first show was. And I think if we could just get the kind of people that we have been drawing in Chicago, a good cross-section. We get some older people, we get a lot of young people, and we get people our own age, right in the middle.
We're starting to lose our... We used to attract a lot of people in puberty. And I think we're missing that. We're going more into the menopause group. And it used to be we used to have a lot of younger kids. They knew us from television and from records.
Mm-hmm.
And now the kids, I think, maybe 17 years old, 16 years old, are really the...
They're about the youngest,
bottom youngest
who remember us from television.
Would be fans of this.
So if we got a show again, we'd start opening up a whole new younger trip.
The amazing thing about you two fellas, and I think one of the Chicago reviewers pointed it out in the paper either today or yesterday, physically you have changed very little. Now, of course, this comes, as we all know, from, you know, good, clean living.
That's right. Well, that's the truth.
There's no
doubt. But, you know, we're also in the middle part of our life where you don't change that much, you know.
There's a section of life, too, that, like from
25 to 35, 40, and a guy, you don't change that much.
It looks pretty much the same.
If you take care of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but they keep bringing up our age, and we keep hoping they just eliminate it. It's irrelevant. You know, you come here to see us, and you don't say, geez, Tom's 37, Dick's 35, and boy, if they were 40, it wouldn't be funny. I mean, that has nothing to do with it.
Tommy and Dick Smothers are at Mr. Kelly's. Of course, everybody knows that by now. Nice to have them drop by and chat with us today. While we were on the commercial break, somebody dropped a line on me that I find hard to believe. The Smothers brothers have been criticized for not being controversial enough.
One of the reviewers in
a couple
in L.A., which is overly hip anyway. I think they get carried away with their supposed awareness. They think like things like The Exorcist and think that's real art. And we were criticized for not being controversial enough. And he says they were terribly mild. And those are the people who didn't realize that what we do, we've always done. And we've never been really controversial, only in... certain people's minds.
Well, a lady called me in the air this morning who wondered about taking the teenagers over to the club. And I said, of course, there's nothing in the act that they won't laugh at and enjoy, certainly nothing to embarrass them.
Most likely, the teenagers think we're a little square, if anything.
Yeah.
They're used to being more direct things than being subtle about them. They say, well, why are they beating around the bush? Why don't they just say that?
Is there the temptation where you have been known to be somewhat politically oriented in your humor? Mm-hmm. Is there a temptation to really lay it on? Do you find yourselves maybe holding back just a little bit?
No.
There's just nothing to say anymore. It's always it's self-satirizing. I mean, just what they do is out there, right out in front. And how can you?
Well, there's things to say, but not in a direct manner. You can't just come out and talk about Watergate anymore, because that's really
it's an easy laugh.
It's old. It's so old. Yeah. You know, but getting around it like Steinberg does.
Yeah.
And talking about.
Yeah.
The administration or personalities in different lights. Or talking about the effects of the administration. That's where it's at. Not just picking on the man.
We're certainly not holding back. We've never held back, and we're not going to start holding back.
No, in fact, when you come out at the beginning, Tommy has a few words to say. Do you open up the same way every night, or do you just do what... Like, you come out first, talk for a few minutes?
I always come out first and talk for a few minutes. It gives me... it's something different, and I enjoy that challenge. It's always a little scary. It takes a while to get that rhythm like David has and George Carlin. They've done it a long time, and so in their mind they get that all that material really down, and then the art starts once you learn the basics. And I'm just getting into the basics, and Dickie's singing a lot more, and we're pleasing ourselves in that way.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the songs. We mentioned briefly there was a Gilbert and Sullivan song, there was a Madrigal. You also do Guantanamo, John Henry. Gee, I haven't heard that in a long time. Whatever happened to the so-called folk revival? It never really revived, did it?
It was very big.
It never did revive, but it's still an important part of American music, and there's clubs, and there are still folk singers around. It just didn't have, it's not in that big flash time like we had a while back.
Have either of you ever written songs?
No, never have.
Temptation to? Desire to, maybe?
I don't think I could. I don't...
The people who are really making it in music today, it seems to be the ones who write it, sing it, arrange it, and the music's totally theirs, you know. And
we do our writing and our creation in our comedy. That's where we write. And we don't write it down on paper, but we do write it. It is created, and so that's our creative spot, and it's not the music. We are poets of comedy, I would say, instead of poets of words or poets in writing.
Tommy, you said something last night that kind of impressed me. It was one of the serious moments. There aren't a heck of a lot of serious moments in the show, but every once in a while, maybe.
There's some truth that wends its way through.
You were talking about doing something good and pleasing yourself, because I guess... You have to please yourself first. I think this is what you were saying last night. Then, if there are people around who enjoy it, well, that's all to the good.
Yes, I believe that.
This is a philosophy.
Yeah, it's something we've always done, and then I forgot about it. After the cancellation, I started feeling that I had to live up to some image and fulfill the image of being the truth-sayer and fulfilling it for other people, and I did a lot of bad things. I mean... artistically inferior things because I wasn't pleasing myself first. Mm-hmm. And we're doing that now.
It comes to home in almost everybody's life, too. They'll when they're young and you want to make the success and you want the money and stuff, you'll sometimes bypass that pleasing yourself trip. And then sometime in your life it catches up with you and you get very upset and disappointed that you're this old and you have never had any fun. Luckily, we're in a business where we could do what it wanted.
You also, of course, are in a business that gets you to travel. I mean, you visit a lot of places. Mm-hmm. You go to a lot of cities, perhaps spending more time away from home than you would like. But you also get to see other people. Are there any young people on the scene that you've caught in recent months that seem to be a little exciting from a talent point of view?
Oh, yeah. Lily Tomlin. I think she's so fantastic. I saw her work a club. There was a standing ovation and the most brilliant dealing of real issues without saying it.
Oh, yeah.
And dialects and characters, really impressive. And Richard Pryor and David Steinberg, I think the comedy, and George Carlin, everybody's getting a good role. They're starting to stretch out. And John Biner now, as I've seen him a couple of times, has really got his thing together. And it's exciting. I think that music...
None of these people are brand new, but...
But
they are
still
very
fresh. That's one of the hardest things to get.
Yeah.
Yeah, where does this is one of the problems that actually television created a young comic. If he does have a little spark of talent, somebody puts him on the tube, and then all of a sudden, you know, most of America has seen him before he's had a chance to really develop.
Yeah, we have a feeling that it happened to us in a kind of a way that television dulls the edge of comedy, of performance. It dulls it. And because television itself doesn't allow you to have space, and comedy particularly is dealing in silences as much as the words.
Well you've got a thing here, you got Second City here. This is one of the great, the improvisational theater, that's still one of the great places for honing your talent.
Yeah, and listen, right up the street from you over at the Happy Medium right now, I think is one of the funniest shows that has hit Chicago in a long time. A show called What's a Nice Country Like You Doing in a State Like This?
Yeah.
And it is a funny, witty, satirical,
that's what I
great
hear.
Show.
I hear it's a crummy title, but a great show.
I don't know, I think the title is kind of funny, too. You guys going to get back on the tube at all? Would you
know.
Like to?
Well, down the road, we would.
We don't know. We don't care one way or another right now. All we care about is being sharp and being ready for whatever opportunity comes by and getting in the flow of things.
The Smothers Brothers are back in Chicago. They're at Mr. Kelly's, one of the places that it all started a few years ago. And now the country rolls on. The Smothers Brothers are back singing songs, having fun again.
And it's really going well. Yeah. We've got some really good bookings. Like you say, do we want television again? But right now we're so happy in the saloon circuit, so to speak. You know, we're going to be playing Vegas and Reno again. And since we were here last, we played New Orleans during Mardi Gras, which is
out of sight.
Had either of you ever been to New Orleans at Mardi Gras time?
Never.
Before? Right, level with us, because I've always wanted to do this thing. Is it like
it's
you would think?
Right now, arranging your schedule so you'll have 1 week that you can go down there.
This
that
is it, huh?
Fantastic.
Yes. It's something that you can't read about, you can't see it in a movie, and nobody could describe it. It's a feeling.
Good.
It's a happening. And that city, the French Quarter, has, of course, you have to meet somebody. You have to be somebody you know down there. It has so much soul that nowhere else has. It's just fantastic.
You've been doing this thing now, the new act, for, what, 4 months?
About 4 months.
Four or five months. Now, is it much different today than it was at Lake Geneva 5 months ago? Have there been that many changes?
Well, the changes are confidence and timing sharper, and the silence is more astute. And
people, what I'm getting at, though, people are still laughing at the same things, I hope.
Yes.
People still find the things that you do funny. You're not having to find new ways to be funny. You can just be the Smothers Brothers, and people enjoy it.
Well, generally, when we're on the show, when we're doing well, and we generally never overhaul our show and put in a new show. What it is evolutionary. We may pull out one bit.
Gently changing all the time.
Changing, just flowing. And that way we never really shock ourselves and we keep the show good.
By the way, I'm glad you're singing. I'd like it. I'd like to hear a couple more songs if you ever saw
We would like to do some more songs too, but working here with a second act and having a limited time, we do a... Our show has been running over an hour at Mr. Kelly's, and they would like it a little bit less than that. Because
I had to wait in line last night. It was cold out there. Yeah,
people get angry.
Jerry Palmer's on the show, a girl singer. She's really good.
Yeah.
There's another show.
For Jerry Palmer, for Tom and Dick Smothers, it's Mr. Kelly's. Thanks for coming by. You know you're always welcome.
Well,
I hope we can do it again.
It's always really a pleasure to do your show.
Thank you, Tom.
It's always a pleasure to be had here.